Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to this new and exciting podcast, totally devoted to the royal families around the world. My name is George de Curl, de Curl if you're Flemish, de Curl if you're French. And together with Linnea Wolfson, we will take you behind the scenes and talk to guests who will hopefully share with us some of the secrets of the royal families.
George, It's really good being with you here at the Acast studio in London. But before we dive into the world of the royalties, I want us to introduce ourselves and give the listeners a chance to get to know us a little bit better. George, you were born in Belgium, and you also hold a French passport, so clearly stand with two legs in the European Union, no matter what happens here in the UK. As icing on the cake, you also seem to know Evit Tsar and Dvoryanstvo of Russia. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Not really, but it doesn't matter.
Okay, all right. To start with, tell me about your career as a photographer and how it all started.
Well, I was born and raised in Belgium and decided early on, given my academic successes, that I should aim for a profession that didn't require going to school. And I found one, which was press photography. At the time, press photography was taking place in Paris for the main part. And I decided to make my way to Paris, where I started actually not as a press photographer. I had hoped to start as a press photographer, but I started as a dispatch writer. Mm-hmm. So I started for the French agency called CIPA Press, you know, taking pictures here and there to various magazines and newspapers.
And you had a dark room at that time, didn't you?
And I was also working in the dark room. I was actually doing anything that I could put my hands on, having read somewhere that actually the best way to become a press photographer was to wake your way up once you were inside a company. So I very quickly realized that royals were interesting because they were, you know, quite predictable in a way. They could follow a schedule. They were doing the same thing at the same time every year. And also, they were very popular around the world, that a lot of people talked about them, dreamed about them, were excited about what they were doing, took them as role models. So I very early on decided that royal photography should be a focus of mine.
So did you go on any of the trips or something to start with?
Well, funny enough, it's true that in the very, very early, late 70s, I covered with a colleague of mine, my first royal visit, which was the King and Queen of Spain to Holland. I had sort of, realized that they were embarking on a royal visit, and not being far from Paris, it was an easy one to start with. And so we drove to Holland with with, I can't remember whether we were properly credentialed, probably not, but at the time it didn't really matter. And I started to cover these walkabouts that the Queen and Queen of Spain had actually had pioneered. Everybody says that these walkabouts were pioneered in the UK by the British royal family, but I think the Spaniards were quite early on doing walkies to meet their subjects. From Paris, I moved to the UK, having more or less specialized on the royals. And, beginning of the 80s, if people remember, there were the days, the Dinah days. Lady Di, or Lady D for the French, was still a young girl living in Collin Court off Old Brompton Road. And she had been rumored in the media being a very close friend of Prince Charles. So obviously media frenzy, and that generated a lot of interest. And at the time, the agency that I was working for said, well, instead of going back and forth to the UK, why don't you just go and live there? So I thought, yeah, why not? And I moved to London after having been a few times in the UK photographing Lady Di at the Royal Week of Ascot. I moved to London permanently in 1982.
Right. So taking it from there, so you're now in London covering Diana primarily. She was big business at that time, wasn't she?
She was generating a lot of interest. I don't know if I would call it business, but obviously, yes, one has to make a living. So it just meant that you could sort of sell the photographs everywhere.
Tell me about your first experience with the British royal family. So you're now over in Britain. And how was it here?
Well, let's rewind a little bit. I was not yet in Britain, but I had decided, and my editor, had decided to send me. And one of the reasons was that, apart from being an amazing photographer, I could speak English, which was something pretty rare at the time in France, that most of them do not speak English and so are quite handicapped when they come and travel to the UK. So one of my first job was to attend and to photograph the Royal Week at Ascot. And at the time, obviously having decided to make my way to Ascot late, I probably missed the deadline for the accreditations. But not deterred, I decided that, just go in with the public. And I sort of bragged my way in the royal enclosure, and the guy at the gate thought that I was going to make my way across the royal enclosure and go where the media was. But halfway across the media enclosure, the royal enclosure, I saw all these sort of people in top hats and beautiful and women beautiful attire sort of lining up waiting for the royal procession. And I saw my colleagues, they were not my colleagues yet at the time, but the press photographers high up on a balcony. And I thought, well, that's not a very good angle. Mm-hmm. I might as well just stay here. And it doesn't seem to be anyone here with me apart from the public. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, realizing probably that it was not exactly the place where I should be. But as the cortege arrived, raised my cameras and started photographing away. Immediately, obviously, the security jumped on us, me and my French colleague, and told us that we were not supposed to be here. And we just got ourselves parked up on the balcony for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. But so that was my first encounter with British security.
And did you already have the shots when this happened?
Yeah, of course, it's after. So, in the end, we didn't really care too much, but we just apologized because I realized that in the UK, you had to apologize all the time and said that we would not do it again. Mm-hmm. And actually, we never did it again.
There is nothing better than working with photographers who do exactly that. Think out of the box, give it a try. I just love that. You always get so much better pictures when you think slightly differently.
I think the British photographers were also, what the British photographers at the time were very good at, it was to organize themselves and to get a consensus among them to, keep the distance. While the French photographers are a lot wilder. And so you work very close to the people you photograph and it always ends up in a bum fight. Whilst in the UK, it's actually a much more civilized. It's a bit like driving in London. People sort of stop at the red light, won't let you cross the road. In France, they will try to and get away with it.
Try to jump it. But it reminds me that it's also the same with the Royal Rota, which I know doesn't work the same in Scandinavia. I love the Royal Rota, where the agencies all take turn in photographing, whilst in many of the Scandinavian countries, it's one single agency that gets most of the material. I think that's a really good system here in the UK.
Well, I guess we could go into details in following podcast, how the Royal Rota works.
Definitely.
But it is true that England has, but it's down to the character of the Brits that, you know, they love to queue, they organize themselves, even when it's bad. I'm sure that during the Blitz in the war, people were queuing to get into the shelters. And I'm not sure that it would have happened in France.
So you were here, obviously, during Diana and Charles's wedding. You were also here during the Lindo wings, you know, waiting for William and Harry to be born. So tell us about the early years.
The royal wedding of Prince and Princess of Wales. I hadn't moved to London yet, but... we traveled with many colleagues and organized this very seriously, our coverage, where would I go, where would they go, how would we ship our films, how would we, because obviously the whole world was waiting for these photos. The photos were supposed to be either outside of St. Paul's after they had been married, or on the balcony of Buckingham Palace. We didn't really know. And sort of by experience, you knew that at a wedding, you have a kiss. And the kiss was going to be the most photographed kiss in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So my job was, because obviously being from a French agency, we didn't have all the access, was to stand in the crowd for about 48 hours without breaks in front of St. Paul's. And I had a very nice position in the crowd, front row, by the fence, taking that position. And, you know, like the countdown, they arrive, they go into St. Paul's, they leave St. Paul's. And as they left St. Paul's and they were about to stand on top of the steps of St. Paul's, the royal carriage taking them back to Buckingham Palace arrives. And the first carriage is open, and they had as a safety a covered carriage just in case it rained. It didn't rain, but the carriage was still there. And being a closed carriage, the coachman, the guy who drives the coach, was sitting high up. And as the coach stops in front of St. Paul's, not the open carriage, but the one behind it, the coach is right in the door. He's just... I can't photograph.
So it's blocking you.
It was completely blocking me. So
after 48 hours
waiting, surrounded by people that were not actually welcoming because they thought I was going to move or I was going to get in their way, the moment comes where maybe, and thank God the kiss didn't take place there, I find myself with no view. So I wouldn't say in tears, but very, very disappointed. Huge crowds. I make my way to Buckingham Palace. I get to all my colleagues who were standing on QVM, and they were all, you know, rejoicing because, you know, the prince and princess had appeared on the balcony and had kissed. Mm-hmm. And most of them, apart from one, I think, I won't name him because he still remembers probably, but had got the kiss. And I had got nothing. Basically, I had, you know, I had come all the way, stood in front of St. Paul's 48 hours and got nothing. So we wait. And later in the afternoon, the Prince and Princess of Wales, in an open carriage, made their way to Victoria to go on their honeymoon. And what the brothers of Prince Charles had done, they had attached
Andrew
balloon,
Andrew and Edward,
and probably Princess Anne was on in the joke. They had attached balloons, just married to the carriage. And as they left Buckingham Palace, I didn't have a prime position, but on the side, as they go around QVM, I sort of picked up my long lens that I just bought at great expense 2 days before, and managed to get myself a little position focused on Dinah, who at the time turned and exchanged a few words with a horse guards who was riding alongside a carriage. And I had a beautiful landscape photo that I probably share at some point to the people, what, you know, listening to this podcast.
Do you know what? Anyone listening to the Acast app can actually now see the image if you have a look right now.
So I managed to get this beautiful photo that made a beautiful double spread in Paris Match at the time in color, which was quite rare because magazines were still using a lot of black and white photos. So in the end, I saved the day. I had a beautiful photo published, and this photo that I still cherish to this day.
And and publications would always look for something slightly different because, again, from the QVM, which is obviously the statue right in front of the roundabout, right in front of Buckingham Palace, that's what everyone, I suppose, had. So you gave them something slightly different, I suppose.
Well, the fact that you use a long lens gets you inside the action, and sometimes you're not really welcome there, but it gives you something that the Joe public would not, or the public would not see.
And it reminds me of Prince William did something similar with Kate on their wedding day, when they also came in their open, was his father's car that they drove from Buckingham Palace to Clarence House.
Aston Martin, the blue Aston Martin that his father used mainly to go to polo.
And again, it was a lot more lighthearted, and it just showed them in a very different light when it's not so formal and they'd had a party and it was just the end of the day. So.
Well, I think this is what you want, and you rely on good media coverage of the royal family to show the official side, but also the sort of not so official, but so the authentic side, that they are basically human beings and they have, they have these little, moments between them. Mm-hmm. And even if they're in the limelight, in the eyesight of billions of people, they still have shared these little moments. And the wonder of Prince William with the Duchess of Cambridge inside the Aston Martin looking at each other was a lovely picture.
And nothing beats a long lens, not even a little iPhone. You know, the audience can rarely capture these specific moments.
Most of the royal photographic coverage is all about access, mm-hmm, and anticipation, because they don't do anything for you. They just allow you to be there, and then it's up to you to sort of anticipate their movements and be ready with a long lens or a short lens or medium long lens to catch that sort of authentic emotion.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So then you started to get it. Or eventually you started to get images.
Well, no, eventually, because, see, you're still, you're fast, linear. You've got to slow down a bit.
You're,
and I did stay, 9 years in London between 1982 and 1991. And in 1991, I decided that, to move on and move to Russia, where, it used to be... they used to have a Tsar until 1917. Mm-hmm. But in Russia, even then, I did keep on covering the royals whenever they were coming on official visits. And I remember the Princess of Wales at the time, she had obviously married Prince Charles, came to Moscow and paid them a visit. And the Queen as well. I remember the Queen inside the Bolshoi Theater. But yes, mm-hmm, after then Moscow, since you're probably going to again ask me about my years inside Getty Images, I moved away from I left Moscow, moved to America, worked in DC, where I did photograph another kind of royalty, which was the White House, a mm-hmm, Republican royalty.
Who was the president at that time?
It was Bill Clinton, the naughty Bill.
And his wife?
And his poor wife, Hillary, mm-hmm, who, was poor at the time and lost the election again. So, it was Bill and Hillary and, mm-hmm, and then a young intern called Monica. Mm-hmm. But we won't mention her name, mm-hmm, here. Yes, so after the White House, during my years inside, not the White House, but covering the White House, we started a small company that we passed on to Getty Images, and I started to work there, to work for Getty Images in 1999 as a managing editor. So, I mean, where is my royal focus there, working behind a desk at Getty Images? Well, early on, I realized that Getty Images, you know, was not taking royal coverage seriously. So it took a few years to convince the management, who was very American, that the royal families were a serious business and deserved our attention. And, you know, after having moved from New York to London, managed to convince the management that we had to be part of the rota. But that's another story. But yes, my focus kept on. And once in a while, also managed to sneak out of the office with a camera and documented royal weddings, royal birth, and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And actually, what I want to get to is, this is where you met me. This is why I wanted to fast forward. No, but I remember quite clearly myself when I started the whole thing. Having been, I'm sort of Swedish, and having been brought up in a media climate where the views and the way they reported was very, very different from Britain. They sort of respected the royals in a whole different way. It wasn't about mocking and ridiculing them. And I found the same thing here in Britain, that there was so much to take from. It was like an unpolished diamond in many ways, and also wanted to push for more royal coverage.
But yeah, I think it's a good point, because I think that there was a big break between the coverage before the Princess of Wales arrived on the scene and the coverage, the media coverage after.
But it's also interesting with I guess at that time it wasn't as steered up and it wasn't as strict as it is today, and it probably has to be today because of security reasons and so. But I remember you mentioned a while back about your coverage in how do you pronounce it, Schiphol. Schiphol, the airport.
Yeah.
So give me the rundown there, something that would never happen today.
Well, you're referring to something that I've told you about my first, and mentioned early on in the podcast, the first royal visit that I covered. It was the King and Queen of Spain. Mm-hmm. And the last day of the visit, we had to photograph the departure. And so basically we followed from one engagement, the royal cortege, all the way back to the airport. We obviously and followed the cortege onto the tarmac, parked the car next to the royal flight, got out of the car and started photographing them. I think the same thing would happen now. You probably wouldn't go near, well, definitely not near the royal flight, or if you managed to get near, you probably would be dead because you would have been shot to pieces. But yeah, this has changed, and even early on in the early 80s, there were a lot of things you could do photographing or covering the royal family that you can't anymore.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
I'm sure you've achieved a lot. Maybe you could share with our listeners what was your first contact or experience with a royal or royal families, or
going back to my childhood back in Sweden. So my father was a press photographer, and at home we had every weekly and monthly magazine that you could ever wish for, and amongst them quite a wide selection of royal publications. And I always used to flick through them, and just like today, just like today's Netflix series, you just get hooked, and the storyline is just incredible when you include every single royal family. There's always something happening, and I guess it's like a never-ending series as well. And certainly nothing like anything written in Hollywood. It's far better than that. So I always used to, from a very young age, used to follow every single royal family around the world, and got to know how they're all related, and how, you know, who's pregnant and who's engaged, and all these things. I then followed in my father's footsteps in some ways. I studied media and ended up in the world of photography here in London, where I worked as a global assignment editor for a few photo agencies such as AP and Getty. And obviously this is where I where our paths crossed. And I oversaw the entertainment coverage in different territories and worked with all the royal events and had weekly contact with the royal households in Britain, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Netherlands, I think. And it meant that I had to make sure that we got coverage from every single state visit and birth and christening and wedding and funeral and opening of a royal envelope, really. So whatever happened, I had to make sure we had a photographer there. And my favorite was always when royals visited some remote places and I had to call in the sports or the war photographers. The brief could read like this: look out for an 80-year-old grey-haired lady, i.e. the Queen. Make sure you get her complete outfits. We don't just want her expressions and close-ups. We want to see what she wore, and that's not what they were used to photographing. And also when the young princesses were going somewhere, make sure you get a side-on shot just in case she's pregnant. And it was always slightly below them. But they often got a much wider usage spread than what they were used to. So it clearly showed that there was a great interest in the royals. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you had a similar experience when it came to Wimbledon and the Olympics, didn't you? That you asked the sports photographers to turn their long lenses from the royal seats to the royal seats. And the same thing happened there. They turn out to be the most published shots.
Well, yes, it's true that it's always a bit of a challenge when you try to organize some coverage of something that you care about, using someone who either doesn't care much about it or doesn't really know his subject well. And like you said, you photograph the Queen not only meeting people, but anything she does, wears, is important. The handbag that she would put behind the seat, the coats, the hats, and things like that. So yes, it is always a bit of a challenge. And both of us, we've had these challenges trying to organize the best we could the coverage of the thing that we really cared about. And it's true that if the Danish royal family goes around Jutland or the northern the Denmark on a cruise, and you're trying to get a photographer who's mainly covering politics to photograph well them coming off the boat, waving from the boat, it might not always be something that he finds really interesting, mm-hmm. but it still has to be done. And like you said, a sports photographer was used to, the 100 meters, sprint or some swimming, to start, taking his lens away from the action and to photograph the reaction of Prince William in the crowd or the Queen Maxima of Holland, it might not be his main focus. Mm-hmm.
But there is nothing like covering a royal wedding, and there is something truly special being there on the day, and especially when it's an heir to the throne, a future heir to the throne, and when they pull all the stops and you really feel the energy and the people around you, and it's just magical. And just like you, I worked on the coverage of the Princess Catherine and Prince William's wedding, and I was stood at the Royal Horse Guards parade in front of a crowd, and it was people from all over the world, and it was truly special. And one of the snapshots from that particular day that really sort of stuck in my mind is Kate driving past with her father Michael towards Kate Middleton, as she was called at that time, driving towards Westminster Abbey, and just her life would be changing within the next half an hour. That was incredible seeing that, and as I said, you really felt it in the air. And you somehow have to pinch yourself.
And Liniana, I mean, you're quite obsessed with the Scandinavian royal families, in particular the Swedish. Just tell us what you like about them, and actually what makes them so special and different. But, they're probably the way they are, the way they act, the way they behave.
Well, I do like to fly the flag for the Scandis, just like you said. And having worked closely with them, it's very different. It's a very different feel. You get a lot closer. They're quite a lot more down to earth. And maybe because they're not as known around the world as the Brits, which is without a doubt the most famous royal family in the world. But there's a close knit community there between them, and you can really sense that, that they're all, the Norwegians and the Danes and the Swedes are all very, very close. And one of my favourite Scandi highlights would have been in 2010, so the year before William and Kate's wedding. I managed the Getty team on site in Stockholm when Crown Princess Victoria and Prince Daniel got married. And it was the same thing there. It was just a really special feel and to be in the office. I think it was the Foreign Ministry office that was converted into our office for the day and to a temporary office. And when you get a first glimpse of the dress and you see the pictures streaming back and just being part of it from planning to seeing the final results, and then obviously the day after seeing all the or the same day when you see the pictures getting published everywhere, it's a very, very special feeling. And one of the memories from that day is also when I think it was towards the end of the day, and I was close to leaving the office, and our French photographer, he was with us in Stockholm, Pascal Le Secretin, I was picking up his SD card and got trapped in the audience right in front of the castle. And it was when Princess Victoria was holding a speech to her people. And I was stood just a few hundred yards away and couldn't move. So I had to stare and just listen to it. And it was very special being part of the historic day and just taking it all in. So that's the highlight of working with working in the media industry with the royals, for sure.
So, I mean, we will, you know, we will try to have this bi-weekly to start with. We intend to have a media review of the various, the activities of the various royal families around the world. We won't talk only about the Brits, but we will talk about the Scandis, the Belgians, the Spaniards. We will also talk about the Grimaldis, the reigning family of the Principality of Monaco. We could go east as well.
I want to learn more about the royal family in Japan. I think they've got some really interesting things going on over there. So,
indeed. And then you have, the Thai. I mean, you have a lot of them reigning in exile.
Middle Eastern, not to be forgotten.
The Queen Rania of Jordan, who is very active socially on Twitter and Instagram.
So you will hear from us again in 2 weeks' time. And meanwhile, don't forget to subscribe.
I think the success of this podcast will be if it becomes really interactive. And if you take part, you could have stories that you can share with us. Maybe you've attended some royal events. Maybe you have stood in line waiting to hand over a bouquet. Maybe you got something back from the palace, because they usually do. So I think the more you interact with us and the more questions you ask, the better it will be for everyone, because, you know, it's your podcast as much as it is ours.
Good ending, George. Looking forward to speak to you all in 2 weeks' time.